explosion.
Welcome to Crushing 40 with your host, Kimberly Love, focusing on women, dating, relationships, empowerment, and more, only on Impact Radio USA.
Welcome back to Crushing 40 on Impact Radio USA. I'm your host, Kimberly Love, author of You Taste Like Whiskey and Sunshine. I just want to let my listeners know that I will be signing books at Amherstburg Uncommon Festival on September 27th from 4 to 10 p.m., September 28th, 12 to 10 p.m., and September 29th, 12 to 6 p.m. I would love for you guys to come out and meet me and have an amazing time at the festival. There are plenty of live performances going on for the whole family. There is the option of dressing up like a wizard or in the steampunk fashion. It's going to be a blast, so I would love to have listeners come out and join in on the fun. Today on the show, we have an amazing inspirational story for you. Author Natalie Rostokian is the author of Masks, Fame, Betrayal, and Passion. She has a journalism and television background, but she has a powerful story to tell. So welcome to the show, Natalie.
Hello. How are you doing, Kimberly? Thank you so much for having me. And before saying hi to everybody, I just want to congratulate you for your book signing. I'm so happy for you for doing this event and the achievement, and so glad to be with you and all the audience out there in Windsor, Ontario, in Canada, in the United States, Detroit, Michigan, and, well, everywhere else in the world. Well,
exactly.
Well, I don't know, wherever they are listening to us. I'm so happy that they could be with us, and I'm so happy that I could be sharing my story and having this interview with you, Kimberly.
Oh, thank you so much for being here. Now, your book, Masks, it follows Anna as she struggles to find herself and her love as she navigates the social, religious, and sexual taboos of the Arab world. Why was this book something that you wanted to write?
Well, first of all, I wanted to write because I come from somewhere. I was born and I was raised in Lebanon, and I'm Armenian. And both my grandfathers are genocide survivors. So I was born and raised there because they survived the genocide, and my parents were born there. And I had a different life from the life that I have seen here in Canada. I wanted to write this book because I wanted to inspire women in the West what's happening in the East. Not because they wouldn't care, because they are women living on the other side, because that's my voice. And everything that I have been through, I mean, there are a lot of reasons, but the main top reasons, first of all, because it's my voice and the experience that I have been through and the mistakes that I have made in order to achieve things in life, which I regretted later. So it was some kind of psychoanalysis, we might say, for myself, therapy. And second, because no one before me dared to write and raise their voices over there, and coming to Canada and falling in love and being with someone who's the love of my life, Nidal, my husband. I just think that in this serenity and finally having inner peace after all the inner turbulence and the anger and unusual, unstable psychological states that I have been through, in order to keep what I had over there as a public figure on television and as a journalist and a TV show host, for me it has been a new step to bind the world of women together between the West and the East, and to tell them I am the first one as a female public figure from Lebanon and the Arab world who is writing about her own demons and removing her own mask, as well as trying to help others to remove their masks, because we are women everywhere around the world, and we should embrace each other, and we should understand more, because for me, it's a voice. The book is a voice, And at the same time, it's a way of connecting. And I was, Kimberly, I was really shocked. I mean, when I got so many interviews in interest from the West and people started buying in the States, in England and Canada, even in Australia, Iceland, I was like, oh my God. I mean, they are really interested. They want to know because they see a different idea about us. They see like, for example, they don't even know the difference between a Lebanese or an Armenian or things about related to religions. And they just, a lot of interviews they had with me, they say, do you wear hijab? I mean, excuse me. Oh, it's very good that I wrote a book because me, I'm Armenian. We are the first Christian nation in the world, 301 AD. So, but for me, I respect all religions. But the thing is that we are always scared. We are always like, perplexed from things that we don't know. For me, it was self therapy and like confessing rather than going to church because I'm not Catholic, I'm Orthodox, and I'm not like, I believe in God and Jesus in my own way. And I think that going to church is like confessing, it's a confession between God and my own voice alone in the room. And at the same time, it's an idea for bringing out their voices because it was torturing me, Kimberly, you know? I mean, things that I have lived and seen. So I said, I'm going to write. I didn't even know that it's going to be a book. So there it is.
No, I think your story is very amazing. And like you said, I think the reason why so many people are contacting you and talking about your book is because I know women in general, when someone speaks up, it gives others power to speak up as well. And I think that that's the importance of telling your story and for others to tell their stories, because there for the longest time women were seen as someone that shouldn't speak. You know, if things happened to them, they had to stay quiet. They felt that they should stay quiet even for their own safety. And so I really respect the fact that you're willing to tell your story in the way that you are.
Yes, I think that it took me a lot of courage, and I added some things and I changed in the story in a fiction way, not because I wanted to, but I didn't want people to be confused among 40 characters. So I had to bring some ideas from other people to put in the characters, you know, and
right.
Some incidents from different people to put in the characters, because, I mean, the readers cannot read about 40 characters at one thing at a time.
Right.
But all the names in the book, they have meanings, starting from the name of the protagonist herself, Anna, because a lot of people said Anna, I mean, it's a very very well-known name. It's very like a common name. I said no, but because in Arabic, Anna means I am, and it is the voice. It is my voice, mm-hmm. Anna. And I wanted to say in Armenian, of course, because that's my mother tongue, but in Armenian, when I say I am, it means yes. So it's like saying yes in English. So it was, I couldn't name her yes. But at the same time, in Armenian, Ane means he is or she is, because we don't have male and female in the language. So it also just brings out the idea. And like Joe, I mean, the one that she's in love with, like it comes from St. Joseph. I mean, although Anna had nothing to do with saints in the book, she's a very perplexed character like me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so, like, she has all the sides. She's a human being, because all my characters in the story, they are real people and they are inspired by real people. But the thing is that I named them and I wanted people to understand that there is so much into this story, because it's like my baby. I don't have any children, and I think that it's my baby, and all women out there are my sisters, and all the girls who haven't been things that I have been through are like my daughters, and I'm giving out the message, not because I am so much smarter, I mean, or more intelligent than anybody else, no, because I had been through stuff, I had been through experiences because of my own choices sometimes, most of the time, and sometimes because the society urged me to wear a mask, and because I feared a lot, and I was scared to be judged, but I'm not anymore, and I say that we should all do that, but over there, they are still the same, Kimberly, they just don't talk and don't say things that they should in order to stand up for themselves. The system doesn't help them, and regardless of religion, it's not only it's the mentality, it's the society. And I just say that I don't believe that word can be used anymore if every single woman, especially we as female public figures who had been abused or been in had been through sexual assault or rape experience, we stand up and we say, I have been raped. Somebody made a pass at me. Somebody assaulted me, hurt me. And when we stand up, we are the society, and these people should be stopped. And that's why I just think that it was hard for me to say, answer questions like that. But I'm not scared anymore, because I think that it is very important to choose courage over other things, like to be blamed, to be accused of, to be criticized, because we should get over these things, because these things are destroying us more and more as women. And we should just see what's going on everywhere around the world, because we come from the same species and we are amazing human beings.
I couldn't agree more. Now, for the listeners, Masks is written in fiction, but it is based off of true events that happened in your life. Now, did you find some of these things difficult to write about?
Yeah, yes, yes. Especially the places, the erotic places where I had to write, it was really hard for me. And it is, as you said, yeah, it is a dark tale, erotic tale based on true life events. It is fiction. Changed names were changed, and it was very hard for me. Honestly, when I was writing, I mean, I cried a lot while writing, mm-hmm. because every time I had to remember things, but I kept on writing. And I thought that even a lot of people, they tell me, like, when they talk about psychology, that, oh, wow, once you write, I mean, everything will be okay, because it's like therapy.
Yes.
I disagree. It wasn't therapy. It became worse for me. But once I started talking to the media, like I'm doing with you now, and talk to people, and now that I'm having chance to speak as a motivational speaker to women or people, and to tell them, be courageous, stand up. Because they are bringing the same taboos with them to these countries, because they fear them, and we are raised not to differ between values, ethics, and taboos. I think that that's where my therapy started, when I started to learn to speak to other authors like you, other journalists, radio hosts, and TV hosts and magazines. So that's where my therapy just started, just giving result. But before that, I mean, the erotic scenes and things I had to write about, I mean, that made me, I had to put my feelings and my emotions. I mean, what did Anna feel? And it was hard. It was very hard. I cried a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. And I can totally relate to that.
That's why I don't wear mascara all the time.
Yeah.
Only, only.
That's a good tip.
Don't wear mascara.
Now, the title of the book is Masks. Why did you choose that particular title for your novel?
Because I had worn a mask my whole life. I mean, what's a mask? I mean, they say Halloween. I say, you know what? Halloween for me is the only day that we don't wear a mask, because we choose our own mask and we want to disguise ourselves the way that we want. But for the rest of the days, we as women, especially in Lebanon, in the Arab world, especially us female public figures, where we want to just stay like perfectly in the right angle, not to be criticized, we just wear mask all the time. Mm-hmm. And I wore a lot of masks. I mean, I lied to people. People lied to me. I was very egocentric. I was an angry person. And I didn't show that. I just showed my smile to people. It wasn't the right smile, but I had to. And I betrayed my husband. So he betrayed me too, my first husband. So I went through a lot of things which... I started judging myself, and behind all this, when my own demons started to come out and I tried to face them, I wanted to look in the mirror and see my real face. And this is not something I'm just expressing it as a theory. I'm just saying it as a fact. That's why I called masks, because we hide behind our masks. And I chose to remove my mask, and I wore a lot of masks, because for me, each situation in your life, you wear a different mask. For lying, you wear a mask. For hurting, you lie a mask. For being unhappy and showing your smile, it's a mask.
Exactly.
And for betraying, you wear. So that's why in plural tense, I just said in plural tense, masks, because I removed my masks. And I'm happy that a lot of people are embracing the truth with me. And I'm being their voice. But I thought that there could be no better title for the book than masks, because once we remove our masks, we will be happy, truly happy. I mean, we're not going to be easily happy like having a visit from Cinderella's fairy godmother next day. Like, ding, everything is perfect. No, right?
Exactly.
It's not going to happen. But eventually, I mean, we will have inner peace, because, I mean, I just sit now everywhere, and I feel free. And I know maybe a lot of people just gossip behind my back, because usually men don't like me because I don't know how my husband is in love with me. I mean,
I mean,
men
when it
don't
comes
like
to
me.
These situations where women are fighting back, there are always those certain men that don't like certain stories being
Most
told,
men
so.
Don't like me. Yeah, but because my event, I don't know if you know that I did my pre-launch book event, and the organizer who encouraged doing it, he is a very well-known Lebanese personality here. His name is Mr. Roland Deek, and he was he is the president of the cultural institution of the Lebanese community here in Canada, and he helps people. And he approached me to help me. I'm like, why are you going to help me? You're a man. And he's like, I believe in you. No, you don't. You're a man. Because I know that men don't like me usually. And I cannot thank him enough, because he just did this event for me. And in every way, he did everything from A to Z. And of course, all my friends and helped me also as volunteers. I thank everybody. But he was the first man after my husband. And I call him now. I say, you're my bro. You're my brother from another mother, Roland. So because usually men criticize me. And he said, you know why men criticize you? Because they feel insecure in the presence of women who challenge them,
right,
who have confidence. Yeah, but I think that's true. But women like me, because I like women. I don't know. I can get along with women, I mean, more than men. And like a lot of people, really? Are you a lesbian? I'm like, seriously, get over with it. If you say that I love men, then oh my God, she must be betraying her husband. She's not honest to him. She likes other men. If you respect other women, then you're a lesbian. So you know what? I think that there is a question mark really with the mentality of people. So when I say I love women, of course I do. I'm a woman. I just see,
yeah, it's
what
more
they
of
go through.
A respect,
I see in their eyes,
loving
their suffering
as a species, right?
Yeah, of course, because me, I feel I'm lucky, because usually women don't like women. That's what they say. I say, no, I get along with women because I understand them. But
right.
Men, I don't understand them. I think that I'm lucky to have my husband, because he comes from Lebanon, but he was raised here. But I can hardly see men like them. And the funnier thing is that even here in Canada, in the States, a lot of Lebanese or Middle Eastern, they come and they're bringing a baggage of their own taboos, and they have it here like, oh my God, she's not the virgin? Seriously, what the hell are you talking about?
Yeah.
I mean, it's very scary, and these things are ruining us. I'm not saying that we should live as animals free in the forest. We should have values. We should have ethics, but we should stop using words that put fear in women to stand
exactly
up for themselves and make choices. We should.
Well, in that same regard, women should be treated in the same way that men are, you know, like, you shouldn't be expected to be like, you know, virginal and all that for the rest of our lives in order to gain respect.
But the funny part is that I don't want to be treated like men. If they give women credit for what they deserve, I don't want to be like men.
Right.
Men manipulate, most of them, with all my respect to the minority, because I know she was real light. Exists in the world still, and read other, because if not, I wouldn't have been married to my second husband. I think that a lot of men say, oh, you fight for your rights to be equal. I say, me, for one, I don't fight to be like you. I don't want to be like you. If you give me or you give women what they deserve according to their own education, to their own achievements, that's enough for us, because we are created different. I mean, I don't want to go and do things. I cannot lift something heavy as men,
right,
but intellectually,
yes,
but things as results, I can do things. I don't want their rights. I want my rights. We want our rights, and we cannot do it if we don't stand up. And for them, it's going to go on and on. And I argue, wherever there are men, trust me, I'm not very welcomed. I mean, I'm telling you, I mean, my husband is a unique case. My brother, I call him Roland, is a unique case from another mother. Besides that, I mean, men, when I'm around them, I feel that they're not okay. And, like, they attack me out of nowhere. I wouldn't be speaking to them, and they'd, like, attack me. And I'm talking about from our culture, you know,
right.
Either in Lebanon or here. I hardly have... men friends, I mean, even as colleagues, I never got along with them because of this superiority complex they have. So with all my respect, again, I'm keeping on saying with all my respect. And I think that men out there are saying, if they're listening, yeah, she says what she has to say, and then she says with all my respect, she's lying. So
No. So let's go back into your journey. You have quite the journey, and you've been through a lot. How did this all start? Like, you started in the journalism and television industry. What made you go in that direction?
Oh, I wanted to be famous.
Yes.
I wanted people to see me. And I had dreamt of fame since I was young, and no one believed in me. Even my own parents, everybody laughed at me. And that made me stronger and more persistent to prove them wrong. So since I was young, at 4 or 5 years old, I was like, I'm going to sing. And I stood on tables everywhere, you know, at the dining room and everywhere. And everybody ignored me, of course, around me, like, shut up. And but it's fine. But because for me, I think that it's not about being stubborn. But I went through journalism and television show business. It was hard for me because I had an accent in my Arabic language. Because I'm not, my origin is not Lebanese, though I love Lebanon because it had given me identity and everything, education and chance. But it was harder for me because I speak Armenian and then I speak Turkish, and Arabic is my third language, and English is my fourth language, and French, the worst way that I could just speak. But I love the language. It's very beautiful and sexy. It's French, though I live in Quebec. So... for me, I started my journey when I was 12 on the Armenian theater, because my father used to act on the theater, Armenian theater. So from there, I wanted to go further, but I couldn't because my family, like, nobody just encouraged me. And I decided to get my freedom in order to do things my way. So I was in love already with a guy, so I got married, and from that day, I left teaching because I used to teach science, math, and English, and at St. Joseph Antonin School in Lebanon. So I left teaching from non-school and started doing casting. You know, like, I want to become famous, and I was ignored, and a lot of it is in the book. You will see, like, Anna's journey, how doors shut. at her face, and people laugh at her. And then I went to the TV industry because for me, like, money and power and fame and glamour, it was like, wow, I love it. And then once I stepped in, it's starting to fire back on me, and I changed a lot. And I think that I don't know if I became a different person or that part of me came out, which was already residing in me. But I look back at my past, I'm like, oh my God, how I was. I don't know how I'm going to look. I mean, after 10 years from now, and I'm going to look at me now and criticize always myself again.
Oh, I think you look glamorous all the time.
Yeah, at 17 years, I started. At 17 years, I had. I started as a radio host and on theater, and then I acted, always having the co-starring, but evil actress, the evil roles.
Oh, I see.
It fits me best. So I was always the evil one. I told them again, please, don't give me these roles. Like, they fit you. I mean, thank you.
Well, and that just means you're a great actress, right?
No, I think that for me, the experience in the comedy, it was my best experience, and it was the hardest. It was the challenge, and I loved it on theater, on stage, and that was the challenge. Not having the evil part in drama is very easy, as long as it's not comedy. But comedy, when you're imitating other personalities, like we say, doing in French chansonnier. I know this because we use it in Lebanon, and see, now I'm speaking French. So it was like very interesting, and it was hard. That was the hard. That's when people can decide if you're a good actress or not. That's what I think. That's my personal opinion after 17 years being on the screen. And then I ended up being a marketing manager of two Arabic magazines. So I started traveling around the world, attending conferences for all Arab businessmen, powerful people. And that was another experience, because all my flights were first class, and the first time I just even didn't know how to go to terminal in London. So I was running in the aisles. Oh my God, oh my God. So and then I had a good life from outside, things that I had to have, and it was amazing. And then I had my TV show live on the television Jaras. But after all that, I mean, I wasn't happy in my life. I wasn't happy with my husband. I was betraying him. He was betraying me. I mean, nothing was okay. And then somebody stepped in my life, and also I fell in love with him. So I left everything for him, and I followed him to Canada. And the thing is, in the story of masks in my novel, it's not what the story is. It is, as you said, how it is written and how it is explained what she does. And I think that it should inspire women to be courageous, and it will inspire us to take decisions and stand up and say, you know, I'm responsible for this. I'm responsible for that, and stop blaming others all the time. And okay, sometimes we are not responsible if we are raped, but over there, of course, we are, because they blame women most of the time. But for me, I mean, if I didn't have my past, I didn't achieve what I achieved in Lebanon and the Arab world, I wouldn't been able to inspire women today, because I had things I thought that would make me happy. In the end, they were all things like superficial, and just made me angrier, because you cannot have everything. It's like only in fairy tales, in movies. And I think the director, the scriptwriter of my life, I mean, God, I think.
Yeah, well, like, I think things
here
happen for a reason, right?
Exactly.
You know, you're put in certain situations, and that's how you become who you're supposed to be. You've talked about the downfalls of working in the show business. What was it really like for you? Is this something that you dealt with in regards to sexual harassment? And what did you learn about being part of that?
Yes. There is a lot of sexual harassment. I experienced sexual harassment. Sexual, verbal, and sometimes it was my choice, and sometimes I had no choice. And it was not all the time, but it happened to me. And I know that it happened to others too, but it's not my place to say. it's not my place to speak, because I know that they fear to lose everything, because we are not in a state over there to speak up for our own pain.
Right.
So I just speak for myself. And we don't have a Me Too movement. I think that we should have a We Too movement.
Yeah,
all of us
Me Too
movement.
Everywhere.
It's a We Too, because it's not me. It's not me. It's we. It's all of us. It's women movement. It's power, women power movement. We don't have that. I mean, women just go, now I think they have an institution, they are helping people, women, but it's like when they are abused or beaten but hurt at home. But you don't know, Kimberly, I mean, for the past 15 years, you know how many women have been beaten to death and they died until these kind of ideas just were brought up and they had an institution over there. I mean, women were killed to death by their husband.
Yes.
And nobody did anything. I mean, I'm not talking about 2,000 years ago. I'm talking about now,
yes.
10 years ago. And still today, a lot of people are ashamed. They are like, stay together because children, because they are ashamed, because they have nowhere to go. I mean, I don't encourage divorce, but I've been through things because of my choice too, because I wanted to keep my image. But for me now, I think that things are different. And I thank Canada for giving me the chance. And I think women like you, who, like having me on in their show, on their shows, and asking the questions and telling me what's going on, all the media who is supporting me everywhere around the world. I mean, it's amazing. And I think that just the same way that you are there for me and the others, I'm going to be there for them the way that I can. But if they don't speak up, things are going to just keep on being the same way that it is. I always knew that the appearance, I mean, played a role, and they look at your appearance and they use it. And why shouldn't they? Because nobody says no. And why should you say no? Because if you say no, you're gonna lose, right? Somebody else will come in your place, and there's a lot of challenge. Everybody wants to be famous. So I'm not saying it happens to each and everyone, but I know that a lot of women go through that.
Well, I think
in
your story
our
is
industry
powerful because of that. And like you said, if we're not talking about these issues, then things are never going to change. And that was the power behind the Me Too movement. And I love how you say We Too movement, because it's true. Like you say, you know, we're here together as a collective, and it's important for us all to band together in order to have things change. Now, were you afraid of telling your story, writing your story? Were you afraid of retaliation?
I was afraid in many ways. I was afraid, first of all. I beg your pardon?
How do you deal with the fact that you're being afraid? Like, you know, if you're scared and you have fear of retaliation, how do you go day by day still wanting to tell your story with this fear?
Yeah, so the fear, it comes... I have a lot of fears. I mean, a lot of people around me who were very close to me in my family just... they just abandoned me, first of all. Like, how dare you speak or write things like this? So
Yes. This
was a fear. I knew that it's going to happen to me eventually. But while I was writing, I was still thinking that maybe they will just understand that what I'm doing, it's for the greater good.
Right.
But it seems that I didn't know them well enough I didn't have the fairy godmother on my side that day. And the second fear was because when you bring up ideas like this, and these taboos, they are just still buried there as secrets, and you come up and you talk about things that are happening related to powerful people, between brackets, and they are powerful in every way, like men.
Yes.
And you cannot speak up. And if I spoke about it, and they might hurt me. They don't care if I'm in Canada, I'm in the States. They can just hurt me anywhere, wherever I am.
Right.
But the thing is that in front of this fear, something else I had, which was like, as you said, the retaliation was that I had to believe in myself. I had to have this courage. And why shouldn't I? I mean, I have this chance to write. I'm in Canada. I'm here all alone. I changed my life. Why don't I come with good terms with my conscience and raise my voice? I said, what's going to happen to me? What's the worst thing that could happen to me? Kill me? They're going to kill me. I mean, eventually I'm going to die, right? At least I'm going to die. If I'm going to be killed or vanished very soon, it means that before this book was written, if sooner or later I'm going to die, we're all going to die. I mean, we're not vampires, right? So we're not going to live forever. So at least my vocation is in some way might be accomplished. This is the thing that I say and repeat every single day, and I go to bed happy, knowing that I'm sleeping next to the one I love, and knowing that I am inspiring women. And if I'm going to be hurt, and if something's going to happen to me, it means that it's a part of, I don't know, my destiny. But that's why I think that my having a clear conscience and inspiring women and feeling free, it's just overcoming the fear of being killed or hurt or being threatened. So that's it. And because now I didn't even have a book signing in Lebanon or in the Arab world. It's just here. I started from here, and they are so welcoming, the media here. They're amazing, amazing. And I know over there they know me, but they don't even know what I wrote about. So they are happy, but I don't know how happy they are going to be once they start reading.
Yes.
Like, oh, I do know now that. You're a writer. I'm like, okay, yes, I'm a Canadian writer, but you should read first.
Yes, read the introduction first. Yes, it's very important. And that's the thing that I found too when I was writing my own book, was that, you know, not everybody is super pumped that, you know, you're telling your story, and that's okay too. You know what I mean? Mm. I just want to remind our audience that we are talking with author of Masks, Natalie Rastogian. She is trying to expose the truth of her upbringing and help women own their own truth. I love the fact that you're anxious to start working with girls and women and to help them build a confidence and tell their stories. And, you know, your goal, right, after this book is to also speak about it, right? Do speaking engagements and that sort of thing. How do you plan on bringing awareness to the issue?
I think that we all have our different ways of doing that. But my way is to share my experience with them. I just want to explain to women out there that we here are blessed with what we have. We should have dreams, but what if those dreams become nightmares? And how much we should pay for our dreams? And is it worth it? And what kind of dreams we should have, and our goals, to attain our goals? I mean, is it worth it to give a part of our soul or to be, I mean, hurt and dead from inside? And once I share with them my own experience, what I have been through, I think that it's a way to tell them, first of all, that we are blessed and we can have a lot of chances here in Canada, in the States, I mean, in the West, because we have a system. We have an army of women behind us.
Exactly.
Just whenever we need help. And that's a blessing itself. That's why we should not sell ourselves cheaply and not sell short. And we just have to be realizing that we are very valuable and we should be courageous. And I think that if someone like me, as the first woman who was on television over there in Lebanon, her book just reached being a finalist of Forward in these awards among 10,600 books, multicultural genre in Washington. And I wrote in my fourth language. I didn't even know how to review after my review, the edit proof editing and the proofreading of my book with my editor, David Antrobus. I think that they are able to do anything. Everything is possible when we set our mind onto a special goal, but we should be careful what we wish for. And sometimes a part of us, when it is dead, I mean, we'll need a long time to resurrect it. because when it's dead, and my part of that part of my soul was resurrected when I fell in love again. And it's very funny. I mean, women and girls out there, they will say, "What the hell is she talking about? Love?" Oh. But I say it's true, because when you love, you have peace. Mm-hmm. And when you are loved, you will feel that you are precious, you are valuable. And when you are valuable, you are happy. Mm-hmm. And when you are happy, you can give everything which is positive, not only to the person himself or herself who is in your life, but also to everybody around you. So that's where the word love starts. And for me, I think that, I don't know if that's... That answered your question.
Oh, it absolutely
but
did.
These are the things that I want to inspire them. Now that I'm a Toastmaster at Laval Achievers Toastmasters club here, as a motivational speaker, I learned more and more. And I think that it's amazing. I got my first appearance in Ontario, Cornwall. Soon I'm going to have here my next appearance in Quebec, and I also spoke at my pre-launch book event. It was cute because when I was speaking, when I said the word love, my husband like, "Oh, Roland Deek, I mean the guy who just helped you, he was the first one who started clapping." I'm like, "Oh my God, there are good men out there, brothers."
Yes,
for me, you know?
Is.
And everybody, they just clapped at the word love after he clapped, you know, but it was like, I didn't even realize what my husband did. He said, "I was watching everyone, their expressions." I'm like, "Good for you, my love." So.
Now, you're the first female public figure from Lebanon in the Arab world who has been daring enough to break these cultural change and get your novel out there. You exposed the reality of the treatment of women as well as celebrities in the entertainment industry. That was clearly a moving experience for you and something that was also scary as well. Now, what do you tell the young girls out there who are in similar situations that you are and who are scared to tell their stories? How do you give them
the courage?
I tell
them to come to me, because that's what happened. Because I know what they go through, and I think that we have to start with women, not girls, when they are younger. Because once women who are like older in age, they come forth, they can just embrace girls who are younger. Because when I went to Lebanon a couple of months ago, and my book was already published, and a lot of women approached me and they told me their stories, which is also going to be in my second book, which I'm writing. And I tell them to come to me and to tell women who are older in age. And I cannot advise them to shout out and tell it at schools, because they cannot. I know there is still fear, because I think that the system, the empire of truth, the empire of justice for us has to be built first of all. And once we have it over there, then we can embrace them.
Right.
And it is not there yet. And we should start with women, not girls. I don't advise girls over there just to stand up at school and say, "Somebody did this." It's going to be very scary.
No.
I mean, look at me. I mean, the closest people to me just, like, they were ashamed that I wrote a book. And, like, they abandoned me. They're not in my life anymore. But it's okay. I mean, everything comes with a price. And it's for the better good. It's fine. I mean, they make choices. I make choices. I mean, we don't have the same goals in life. And I think these people in our lives that we call, like, blood related, I think with all my respect, whoever is in my life, I thank them. And whoever are not, I think that they are all vessels for us, because we are all created by God and He's our Father in heaven. And I think that in a way, we have a vocation, and we should help others, and we should have our own paths, because we are born, each of us, with a vocation. We should find the reason. And girls over there are helpless. They cannot come forth and talk. Like I did, I wasn't able to talk a long time ago. But I think that it should start with women. And it was Kimberly. You should, oh my God. I mean, things that I have written in Masks about women. I mean, in the novel, I mean, it's like, it's a story, of course. I mean, a lot of people like reading the story, like, oh my God, this should be a TV series. I say, yeah, I know, right? And I mean, every author like dreams of that. But I think that when it comes to the screen, girls over there will have more strength. Women have more strength because the visual, it's not like reading. Because over there, it's like visual, it's more understandable, it's more inspiring. And and now Amazon just signed with me, and my book is an audio book. It's coming out in October. I signed with one of them. For me, she is, and she is a well-known narrator and a producer. Audiobook narrator, her name is Nicole Renee in the United States. And she was at my pre-launch book event. She came all the way from the United States with her husband. Nice. Yeah, and she represented, talked about me. And it's going to be out. It's exclusively by Amazon. Amazon is going ACX. It's Amazon is going to distribute it. I signed a deal with them. And I think that audio might encourage them more, but they need to know that they will be accepted, and they cannot. So I cannot tell girls over there in Lebanon, get up, stand up, and talk.
Right.
I don't know how much they could afford to fight back, you know, because they are at the mercy of the society, of the parents, of people around them. So I'm 45 years old, and it's different for me. I'm old. So,
you're also not over there anymore, right? So it's a little bit different for you. But where is your book available right now?
Well, my book is available on the website, on Amazon, eBay, Barnes & Noble, Chapters, Indigo. You can order online. You just have to write the word masks, Natalie, N-A-T-A-L-Y, Restokian, R-E-S-T-O-K-I-A-N. And if they want to watch the trailer, it is available on YouTube also. You write masks, M-A-S-K-S, Natalie. Natalie, my name, it's always, I write like N-A-T-A-L-Y. So Restokian. So they can watch the trailer if they like to read it. So I think it's available everywhere, but you have to order it online.
Right.
In order to have the ebook and or the paperback or the hardcover, and the audiobook, of course, it's going to be by Amazon, the audiobook, iTunes, and everywhere else that they decide. Because I thank Amazon for this amazing deal, and also Nicole Renee, my narrator. So it's going to be there very soon in October. We're just reviewing the chapters.
So you mentioned a second book. What's that going to be about?
Yes. Oh, I'm not going to give all the information.
Oh, it's
Kimberly.
A secret.
Come on.
Right.
The second book is also about masks. And because I have a lot to tell yet, I didn't do the story. I mean, it ends, but there are more things to come. And I'm writing about also... of course, Anna, and new characters will be in the story, and things will change. But the funny part is that my husband, I wrote the book, the beginning and the end, and then filled the middle, the gap. You know, I mean the chapters. I wrote the first book, and I was like, how am I gonna end the second book? How am I gonna end the second book? He said to me, let me give you an idea. I said, what? He says, what about? And I said, yeah. He said, but first, before I tell you, you should promise me that you're going to put my name on the cover too, that I'm the author with you. I said, wow, what? He said, because it's a very interesting ending. And I was like, you know, I'm a woman, but I'm a human being. Sometimes I still lie, you know, from time to time. I said, okay, I will. But of course, I wasn't going to. So I said, okay, tell me. He said, in the end, in the second book, Anna dies. I'm like, seriously? What's happening? He says, yeah, and that's what he says. And then Joe, because I based the character Joe on him, he's so sad, he tries to find someone similar to Anna, and then the adventure starts in the third book. I said, oh my God, now you're the protagonist. He thinks he's that smart. I'm like, what about me killing Joe?
Oh, he's trying to get rid of Anna. That's not good.
Yeah. Exactly. Like I said, seriously, you're not going to do that to me, Nidal. I mean, but by the way, his name, Nidal, it means fighter in Arabic. So,
yeah, I love the fact that your characters' names have meaning behind them. I mean, it's something that a lot of authors do. But, I mean, the names themselves tell their own story, right?
Yes, yes. I mean, for example, Anna's ex-husband is named Vasag. Vasag in Armenian is the name of the biggest traitor in the history of Armenian history, who was the reason, I think, that the Armenian kingdom was collapsed. And he told everything, all the secrets to the Persians at the time. And like Lisa Ladd, she was one of the most evil women in the world who tortured in the Second World War a lot of prisoners. Like, what else? Like Melina, she is the goddess, a gift, or the goddess of power, of fire. And it's Anna's mother. I named her like that because she goes through a lot of things at the time of the war, because it's also the civil war, how Anna goes out of those situations. And yeah, I mean, all the names, like one of her besties is named Rida. In Arabic, Rida means Rida. I mean, being grateful, because this personality is based on somebody I know. He's always so grateful for everything in his life. And it's a personality of, he's a Gabe, and he's an artist, and he loves a lot his life, and how he just has rebellion against the society over there. So, yeah, it's like that, because I just named them according to how I felt I should. I hope you like them.
Oh, I love the character so far. I mean, I'm about halfway through the book, and I think it's incredible. So congratulations on that.
Well, congratulations to you. I mean, I should congratulate you, too, on your great achievements. And I'm so happy to be with you on this show. And that was my alarm, because I just checked, because I did the timing with you. The thing is that I'm very happy to be speaking to another woman author, because we understand each other, and I think that we do not challenge each other. On the contrary, we just bring forth more voices and more thunder to this injustice that is happening in the world everywhere. And it started to rise in the West, but it's still not moving in the Middle East. And soon at other places in Africa and everywhere around the world, whatever is happening to women. And I think that our unity is strength. And I do not believe that we have a lot of differences, because we all have the ability to love. We are passionate. And again, with all my respect to men, we can do a couple of things. At the same time, men cannot. I mean, we can watch television and be folding laundry and thinking about our next novel and I don't know, and drinking coffee. But men, like, with the remote control, I'm changing the channel one thing at a time. Do you realize this? I mean, it's God-given gifts to us, so...
Yeah, I think women are definitely powerful creatures now.
Yeah, we are multitaskers, right?
Yes,
they're
exactly.
Not
exactly. I don't know how I would do with my life.
I mean, you know what? I think that after this show, I mean, this interview is out there, and I put on my social media, I'm gonna be opening a door, and a group of men will be waiting outside to beat me.
No.
Enough is enough. I'm not even gonna have any hazard being killed from Lebanon or Arab world or anybody hurt me. No, it's not gonna reach there, because
no.
I just stepped the borders. But no, I respect men, and I know that a lot of men are good to me. Not a lot, a couple of men again, but in here, a lot, even from Australia, men started buying my book.
Well,
I mean,
that's great.
Even my editor, he's a guy, David Antrobus. I mean, it's amazing. Tellwell Publishing Company, I publish with them. I mean, some people who work with me, like Richard, they are men. But I'm talking here, not over there. But the mentality, the Middle Eastern mentality, I don't have a lot of luck with them.
Well, yeah. I think with anybody, especially public figures, you know, everybody has their haters, whatever that may be. And I mean, it's, you got to tell your story regardless. Now, where can listeners find you on social media? I know you're in a bunch of places. So if they want to learn more about your story, where can they go online to find you?
Yeah, they can go on my website. It's www.natalyrestokian.com. N-A-T, like tango, A-L-Y, like Yankee, Restokian, Robert, like Robert, E-S, like salsa, T-O-K-I-A-N, Natalie Restokian. It's also on my Facebook, Natalie Restokian. Also my Instagram, Natalie Restokian. Also LinkedIn, where we connected. Remember, I talked to you, Natalie Restokian. And my book, Masks, the trailer, and a couple of my shows in Arabic over there on the YouTube. It's posted on YouTube. And the trailer of Masks is on YouTube, on my YouTube channel, Natalie Restokian, also. And when you write Masks, Natalie Restokian, you will see my first speech. You will see the book launch here in Quebec. I mean, I think that they have to just write the name and the family name the right way, N-A-T-A-L-Y, and the family name R-E-S-T-O-K-I-A-N, and it will just, they can follow me, and I will happily follow them back and respond and connect with them, because in the end of the day, I just don't think that there are fans. For me, I have no fans. Everybody who is reading my book, everybody who is listening to us, everybody who is inspired by the story, they are just friends that I never met.
Exactly.
That's what I think. And I never thought like that I had fans back then in Lebanon, though I was very arrogant in many ways, but with my fans, that was another story. I loved my fans because they were my friends, because without them, I can do nothing. Without them, I do not exist. And I think that I am there to connect with them, even to talk to them, and if they have any questions, anything. I don't think there should be barriers. I don't think. I think that everybody out there, even when I was over there, I mean, like people when they came to bring me a gift or something, no, you could not go in. I just told my assistants, don't do this. I mean, there are people like me. Who the hell I am? Just let them in. I mean, it's like the barriers and like, oh, there must be some people who are sick mentally. They could, I mean, get over with it. Be like down to earth and hug and be good and just not be like untouchable, unreachable. It just...
Exactly.
It's like... The difference between me and others, or between you and the others, you got the chance to write and be published, your book be published, or me on television to have my show and my book be published, be a finalist. And some others who dreamt of doing it, but maybe didn't dare or didn't get the chance, didn't have the time, etc., etc., etc. But we're all equal. We are all humans.
Absolutely.
I mean, and the barriers are like having this... thing like you have to go through these people to reach me. I mean, for God's sake, I mean, we are all equal. The only thing that we should be scared and it cannot be reachable is, I think, this is my humble opinion, is who created us, God. Beside that, we are all equal. This is my opinion. And we have, if we have respect to each other and appreciation, that's it. That's all we need. And
I couldn't agree more with you. And we're winding up here to, and I just want to thank you so much for being on the show and having the courage to tell your story.
Thank you so much, Kimberly, for having me.
Oh, you're
and
welcome.
My warmest regards to you. Again, congratulations to you. And thank you for the listeners. And I say out there to every woman, choose courage above everything else in your life. Stand up. And we are all... be standing up with you. Don't be scared.